leadership. And to help us focus our thoughts, we're going to ask our brother Dan Rose to read for us Nehemiah chapter 2.
Nehemiah chapter 2. And it came about in the month Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, that the wine was before him. And I took up the wine and gave it to the king. Now I had not been sad in his presence. So the king said to me, "Why is your face sad, though you are not sick? This is nothing but sadness of heart." But I was very much afraid. I said to the king, "Let the king live forever. Why should my face not be sad when the city, the place of my father's tombs, lies desolate, and its gates have been consumed by fire?" Then the king said to me, "What would you request?" So I prayed to the king of heaven. I said to the king, "If it pleases the king, and if your servant has found favor before you, send me to Judah, to the city of my father's tomb, that I may rebuild it." Then the king said to me, "The queen sitting beside me, how long will your journey be, and when will you return?" So it pleased the king to send me, and I gave him a definite time. And I said to the king, "If it please the king, let letters be given me for the governors of the provinces beyond the river, that they may allow me to pass through until I come to Judah. And a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make beams for the gates of the fortress, for the fortress which is by the temple of the wall of the city, and of the house of which I will go." And the king granted them to me because the good hand of my God was on me. Then I came to the governor of the provinces beyond the river and gave them the king's letters. Now the king had sent with me officers of the army and horsemen. When Sanballat the Horonite, and Tobiah the Ammonite official heard about it, it was very displeasing to them that someone had come to seek the welfare of the sons of Israel. So I came to Jerusalem, and there 3 days, and I rose in the night, I and a few men with me. I did not tell anyone with what my God was putting into my hand to do for Jerusalem, and there was no animal with me except the animal on which I was riding. So I went out by night by the valley gate in the direction of the dragon's walls, well, and on the refuse gate, inspecting the walls of Jerusalem, which were broken down, and its gates, which were consumed by fire. Then I passed on to the fountain gate and the king's pool, and there was no place for my mountain to pass. So I went up at night by the ravine and inspected the wall. Then I entered the valley gate again and returned. The officials did not know where I had gone or what I had done, nor had I yet told the Jews, the priests, the nobles, the officials, or the rest who did the work. Then I said to them, "You see the bad situations we are in, that Jerusalem is desolate, and the gates burned by fire. Come, let us rebuild the walls of Jerusalem so that we may no longer be a reproach." I told them how the hand of my God had been favorable to me, and also about the king's words which had spoken to me. Then he said, "Let us arise and build." So they put their hand to the good work. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the Ammonite official, and Geshem the Arab heard it, they mocked us and despised us and said, What is this thing you are doing? You are rebelling against the king. So I answered them and said to them, the God of heaven will give us success. Therefore, we, his servants, will arise and build. But you have no portion, right, or memorial in Jerusalem.
Let's give our attention now to our Brother Frank Abel. The title of his class is Nehemiah Showed the Character of Spiritual Leadership. Brother Frank.
Well, young people, the slide we have on the screen is a the front cover of this book, Jerusalem in the Time of Nehemiah. It is written by Brother Lean and Sister Kathleen Rittmeyer, both of which are recognized archaeologists in Israel and have done a lot of work in the area. In fact, Brother Lean is one of the very, very few people who actually has done some work on where he felt the Ark of the Testimony rested on the temple site. And he has written a lot of works on this. This is really quite a nice book, nicely done. And this is a photograph of the model that the students in Heritage College in Adelaide made based on his study and his work. So all I've done is I just took a piece. There's a page in here which is easily cut out, and I just put some lines on it to give you some guidelines and put it on that styrofoam panel and trace the walls that he has here and the gates as he assigned them, because I'd done a little study on this before. I really couldn't be sure where these gates were. But for instance, as we just read, Nehemiah came out of the valley gate over here. He came down here, and this is the dung gate at the bottom here, and he came across, and he couldn't get through this area here because there was so much rubble, and he went back. It's interesting how he went all alone in the night, didn't tell anybody what he was doing. He just went out to have a look at the walls because, you know, a leader has to be recharged, has to be built up, has to have his faith and his objectives confirmed as well, and he chose to do that in total isolation. He probably had a few servants with him, but not certainly the main people in Jerusalem at the time didn't understand what he was doing. And then he revealed to them the next day. So this is the plan, and if anybody wants to refer to it, you can have an idea of when you're coming to build, you can see how the wall looks. Not that we will be able to build it exactly like that, but it gives you some kind of an idea. Now, Lord willing, tonight, I have some pictures. Sister Dorothy and I went to Jerusalem. We walked all around this area. We tried to find places of where Nehemiah's walls had been, and Israel is doing a lot of excavation right now, which this is very, very different looking area of Jerusalem now than it is in that picture. But they are excavating into the area of Nehemiah's time. And so you see some of the walls from the picture that we're going to show you. In fact, I think I got a little picture of it right here in this next slide. The background slide here is Nehemiah's Jerusalem. So you might recognize Temple Mount up here. And now there's a road runs through here. Here's the city wall, the old city wall. But this is the city of Nehemiah going down to the point down here. This is the city down here that we're working on that model. And a lot of the work that the Jews are doing presently in archaeology is right here, which is right where a lot of Nehemiah's wall was built and the old city, that the city of David. So you can actually see that in some other aerial views of the area as still being there. And it's really quite something to walk around and having done the study of Nehemiah to try to imagine where these things happened. So as we progress through this second one, I just wanted to go back through the sort of the summary of the book, because if you haven't read Nehemiah or you're not familiar with it, a lot of this just will go right over your head. Okay, so this is the time period after the walls fell to the Babylonians, or the city fell to the Babylonians, there was a period of time when there weren't Jews, or if there were, there were just a few in poverty that lived in the area, until the 70-year captivity was over. Then there was a number of them, some 40,000 of them came back into the area of Jerusalem. Well, not just Jerusalem, but the whole of the area that had been taken captive, some of whom must have been dwelling near Jerusalem. And they built the temple, and that's the period of time of Haggai, the prophet Haggai, and the prophet Zechariah, and much of what Ezra talks about in the book of Ezra. So Nehemiah comes at that stage to build the walls, because they had built the temple, but they had not built the walls. In fact, they really hadn't built the temple as the way it was. They built a small temple on the site, which at least they had a temple, but the walls were in disarray. So he comes back to build those walls. Now, when you look at how things came together, this must have been really critical to Nehemiah. And quite often, if you're doing something in leadership, you're constantly looking at what's happening about you. You're trying to feel, is God with you in this, or is he against you on this? So one of the first things you try to do spiritually is get a sense of whether this is your idea and God's not in favor of it, or whether God is in favor. And a lot of us, you know, look at different things, like I'll take this as, you know, God's being with me if this happens or if that happens. And you have to be very, very careful with that. Life could never be so simple, young people, as I thought it was when I was about your age, that, you know, like all you'd really have to do is put yes or no in a hat. Pray to God, put your hand in, take it out of it, said yes, do it. Like, why would you think it should be any more complicated than that if God's going to bless you? But I found after the years, and it doesn't quite work that way. It's more complicated than that simplistic view. It's a good simplistic view in the sense that you're looking for God to be with you, but, you know, whether this is going to be your companion in life, you don't just pick something out of a hat. You got to do a little more research than that. You know, if I got to live with this person the rest of my life, I don't want to be able to think back and say, well, my research was I picked his name out of a hat, rather than that, you know, I'd really got to know this person. I got to have some respect for their vision of the truth. And you know, that's what tied us together. And hence, here we are. So you have to be a bit careful, but at the same time, through the help of God, he obtained the necessary authority from the king. And I don't think there's any doubt about it in Nehemiah's mind. That would never have happened had it not been for God's blessing. So he went to Jerusalem, and he got the blessing not only of God, but he got the blessing of the king as well. Went to Jerusalem, which was a long way, obtained the support of some of the people. He was opposed by the people of the nations. Like, who would want Israel to rise again? All these nations were quite happy to see the Jews impoverished. They didn't have to worry about them anymore. But to see the Jews build those walls would suggest that now they're going to have control over this area, and these people who had been having it rather good, because it was a very fruitful land, would now have to take back seat. No one wants to do that. You would guess right away that you're going to have enemies if you do this. But that's not uncommon. A lot of things in life, you're going to have people that will oppose it. So he started the work all at once. Like, Nehemiah was so planned and structured that when he started, it looks like he didn't just start on the bottom of the wall and say, oh, we're going to progress around. It looks like people started all over the wall at once. You know, and they were spread out all over the city. So there was maybe quite a distance between them. And that was one of the things the enemies thought of. Like, these people are so separated. If we attack at some point in the wall, the others will never get there to save them. So there was a bit of a weakness in the plan, but he got that wall done in 52 days. Now, I have no idea just how decimated the wall was, but he doesn't give us a very good picture of Jerusalem. He talks about the gates were burned with fire, the walls were broken down, and you get that picture also in Jeremiah. When Nebuchadnezzar and his men went into the city, they didn't leave much for people to pick up the pieces and go along with. So we get onto this. He found much opposition from his brethren who were sworn to the enemy. That's one of the things that is just terrible to have to endure. But, you know, young people, you may not have had much experience in this. And I can only say that as you live long enough, you get a little more experience in this. Don't ever expect that all your brothers and sisters are going to support your spiritual idea. Because that, when it does happen, it's wonderful. When it doesn't happen, it's a real test to you as to whether you want to continue. And if you have an idea that's dividing the ecclesia rather than uniting it, you might second guess it. What does God want? Does he want you to do your thing at the expense of the ecclesia being all divided and people leaving the meeting, etc.? Like, that shouldn't happen. It appears that Nehemiah was able to hold it together, even though people were opposed and enemies were all around him. He was able to hold it together. And they tried to trick him. Like, we got to spend a class in dealing with just how these people tried to defeat him and where he had to be strong, so that you wouldn't expect that enemies would necessarily be much different than what they tried in their cases. So he completed the work, and the people, after having the work done, having the city built, walls up, the gates, bars, locks, the works, didn't understand what walls were for. They'd never lived with walls. Now they had these walls that were probably an embarrassment to them, like, let's open the gates and get on with life. And you wonder sometimes how people can be so lacking in spiritual insight as to see that if you do this, you leave your gates and bars open, you have no defenses at all. Like it says in the Proverbs, it says that a person who does not have rule over his spirit is like a city that's broken down with no walls. If you can't tell yourself to get up in the morning and get the job done, or stay up late enough to get it done, or whatever else it is in your life, that's what you got to work on first. Because if you haven't got that command over your own spirit, not likely you're going to impress other people. That's necessary. And it appears that Nehemiah did. We got a very good example of that in the record. So he's a volunteer. And this is how he prays to God. In Nehemiah 1, verse 11, O Lord, I beseech thee, let now thine ear be attentive to the prayer of thy servant, to the prayer of thy servants, who desire to fear thy name and prosper, I pray thee, thy servant this day, and grant him mercy in the sight of this man, for I was the king's cupbearer. Now, that's really quite a revealing verse. Because first it tells us that he knew that he was in a capacity of leadership, because he was praying, but he was also praying with other people who were praying, and to the prayer of thy servants, who may have been praying together, may have been praying by themselves, but he was the one who was the king's cupbearer. Like, he had a key position that would allow him to do something that other people would never get the authority of the king for. So he recognized, here he was in a position in life that he could do something that other people just couldn't do. They weren't the king's cupbearer. Now, that's one of the things about leadership, is to recognize the uniqueness of your situation and to be able to assess it. Like, hey, you know, who else could do this? I'm the person that just seems to be in this position at this time, hence having the capability of doing this if I can get God's blessing. Now, it was pretty dangerous to come into the king and ask him for something like that, being the cupbearer. You can all imagine the king is kind of defensive about what kind of wine you're bringing to him, but what's in that wine? So if he saw any indication in your, you know, emotion, in their physical appearance, the way you're carrying on, that the king would be upset, like, what's going on? And he did. He detected it right away, that you're sad. Why are you sad? And I would say that, this is just passing on a little bit too far, but what Nehemiah must have done, he must have been mentally prepared to allow that situation to have happened. He said, oh boy, now I got to come up with the goods real quick. And it gives you that impression in the record. We should maybe just look at this, because that's the problem with PowerPoint. Sometimes you don't spend enough time with your Bible open. But if you just go back to Nehemiah and just have a look at this, it is important in chapter 2, verse 4. Then the king said unto me, for what do you make request? Now, do you think he could just have thought, well, now I haven't really thought this through, but you know, wouldn't it be nice if the king was looking for somebody who hadn't thought through? So the preparation was there. Now, we know the preparation was there because these are the little things that you have to tie together in the record. In chapter 1, verse 1, it was in the, it came to pass in the month Kislew, in the 20th year of the king. I was in Shushan, the palace. And that's when those events happened. And then in chapter 2, it came to pass in the month Nisan, in the 20th year. So with 4 months of preparation, that's how long it took him to think this through so that he would be able to go to the king. And I suppose he was looking for an occasion. You might say, well, if you look at the record carefully in chapter 2, he never really came into the king to say, look, I have a request to make of you. It just so happened that when he came in one day, that the king noticed that he wasn't looking right. There's something wrong with him, which was rather dangerous for a man who was a cupbearer. So I had not been before time sad in his presence. The king said to me, why is your countenance sad, seeing you're not sick? Well, that's just the defenses of the king. Immediately he must have shot back, well, why should not my countenance be sad when the city, the place of my sepulchers, father's sepulchers, lieth waste and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? Now, we don't know whether there was maybe a few more exchanges or not, but the important ones are here. The king said to him, well, what do you want to do? Like, what's your request? And then, so I prayed to the God of heaven. Now, many, many people have come to that point and say, well, what? Like, there's no record of what he said. It must have been very brief because the king's waiting for a reply. And for the king to see him now, you know, suddenly closing his eyes, bowing his head and talking, he would have been more cautious than ever about what he had to say. So it must have been, just grant me the strength to do this, which might have just taken a few seconds to carry out what he was prepared to do. So he says to the king, if it please the king, thy servants found favor in thy sight, that thou would send me to Judah, unto the city of my father's sepulchers, that I may build it. And then with a heart throbbing, what's going to be his reply? And the king said unto me, now, I don't know what to make of this. The queen also sitting by him is unusual. Like, why would that comment be in there? Some have thought that was Queen Esther, which may have been. I don't know. I can't prove that. But if it was, it would be an interesting thing, wouldn't it? Because Nehemiah would have seen the opportunity that with the influence of Esther and Mordecai, he had a unique opportunity to do something. Now, that's the sense of leadership, young people, is to recognize that you have not only got, you know, a position other people haven't, but now is the time. It's the time to speak. Well, it just means that if there is a time to speak, which sometimes is a very, very small window of time, maybe just a few seconds as it was here, there must be hours of time to prepare for that little time to speak. Nehemiah had it. He had done his work. He was ready with it. Now, those blessings of leadership do not come if people aren't prepared to put in the time of preparation. So I think he would have carefully observed what he was going to do. And I like that passage beforehand of the fact that others were praying with him. So he wasn't doing this alone. He had a group of people who were working with him and making this plan of how this would be carried out. So it would be practical, you know, not something off the wall somewhere the king would obviously say no to, but it was practical. And with the prayer of God to heaven, and then for Nehemiah to hear the words of the king, for how long shall thy journey be, and when will you return? He thought it out. He had anticipated the king might ask him this question, so he had to have an idea that he would come back. He wasn't going to stay there forever, and I'll be there this amount of time, enough time to get the job done, and then I'll come back. And then he goes on to say, if it please the king, verse 7, let the letters be given to me to the governors beyond the river, that they may convey me over till I come into Judah. And a letter unto Asaph, the keeper of the king's fort. Do you think he just thought of that at that time? I don't think so. That's the preparation, you see, needed for leadership. They thought about this. I go to Jerusalem. What am I going to do? All these people there are against us. That's why the people are a reproach. I go there and I can't do anything. So I got to get this figured out. I need to get some authority from the king. So he got the authority from the king. And not only that, he needed lumber. He had to build those gates, build the walls, or build the bars and that on the gates. I don't know how much wood there might have been in other parts of the wall, but it would have taken enough that he needed authority, special authority to get it. All done. Now, that may have taken just a few minutes of time. And I just think that's one of the interesting aspects of life, isn't it? How minutes, seconds of time, something can happen in your life which changes your whole life forever. You can be baptized, and it can only take just a few minutes to do that, but it changes your life forever. You could get in an auto accident. It just take a split second to happen, change your life forever. That's what we observe about life, that there are times, short periods of time, that have unequal sort of authority over the rest of our life, whether we like it or not. That's the way life is. So, like the Apostle Paul says, don't become overcome with evil. Like, don't go around, you know, with sort of a chip on your shoulder that that's the way life is. You know, you're trying to do anything because, you know, a few seconds later it could be all over. It's overcome evil with good. So how can we take advantage of that? Well, to take advantage of that as a leader means think carefully through what you want to do and have it thought out. So if there comes an occasion like this, like he didn't come to the king to say, I have a request. The king noticed that he was sad. And he was ready. That's an interesting observation. It illustrates the depth of this man, that he didn't just know how to do this, but the way it worked out, he must have felt very, very pumped, I would say, by this, that he's not only got the authority of the king through God, but now he's got momentum, and he's going to go down to Israel to try to get this out. So the need for leadership, and all this is what we find out later. This is going to be the test of the man. You think you got a good idea, you got the king behind you, you feel you got God on your case. Now, what are you going to do with these people? So there was a great cry of the people and of their wives against their brethren, the Jews. Now, you have to understand this. This is a little bit of the record that's you've got to sort of get in mind. If you, in your occupation, like a lot of you people are probably working, you have jobs. Let's just say that we come up with an idea this weekend that required you to leave work for 2 months. How would you pay your bills? Or do you have any bills? Young people don't have any bills. You just spend money, you pay later. Maybe that's the way it is. I don't know. But if you had, these people had families. So how do you just take 2 months off? Like, okay, Nehemiah, it's fine, but you're like, where's our pay for next month? He didn't offer any pay to them. That was what these people had to give up. And what was happening is that they were starving. There was a cry of the people and of their wives against their brethren, the Jews. For there were that said, we are sons and our daughters are many. Therefore, we take up corn for them that we may eat and live. Some also that said, we have mortgaged our lands, vineyards, and houses that we might buy corn because of the dearth. There were also that said, we have borrowed money for the king's tribute and that upon our lands and vineyards. And then it was getting worse and worse, like these people. We can't do this. We can't take the time, Nehemiah, to do this. We don't have the money and the resources. And not only that, there's a dearth. Now that would seem to be God. And you might have concluded that, well, God's telling you don't do this, Nehemiah, because, I mean, how can you expect these people to work when there's a bit of a famine going on? They don't have enough food for their families. They have borrowed money, so they don't have any money. And some of the money was loaned to them by their brethren, the Jews. Like there was a conflict. There was just a whole lot of things on Nehemiah's plate. How are you going to sort this one out? But the job was done. The work was accomplished. Now that's leadership, young people, where you don't just give up because you got a problem. And many problems in this case. I find as you get older, one of the most difficult things is to multitask. You know, it's all right to do one job, but I can get two jobs on the go at the same time, then three jobs, then four jobs. Like I teach school, and one of the problems I have is that after a class, you get a class, students come up to you and, you know, ask you questions. So I find that if you have classes back to back, you don't get any break at all. Like that time is harder on you than the actual class, because when you're in class, you're in control of your time, you're teaching to the students, and you can do what you like in that. So you're going to take a coffee break in the middle of it or something like that. But it's better than in between classes when you got three students asking you about this, and they all want their answer now because they got to go off to class. Then there's a new class coming in, and they want to know what they want to know before the class starts. Well, I tell you, it's sometimes I'm not sure what I said to these guys. Like, I have to tell them, if you want me to do something, send me an email. That's the only way I can keep track of it. You come in and talk to me. I don't know who you are. No one writes anything down. And then you come to me the next day and say, have I done it? That's really a problem I find in today's world, multitasking. You know, you go back to your email at night, and it's all right to have a couple messages. But you got 50 messages. How does anyone ever expect you to respond when you got 50 messages? And I don't know, I think my screen holds about 20. So, after 20, they get bumped off. They're on to another, but you don't even look at them. So you only look at the current 20. So life just hasn't sorted these things out. And I find that I really admire people that can multitask. And I have found that women do it better than men, in my experience. I've found the most blessed people I've ever seen being able to multitask as a woman who can just seem to keep everybody in her mind and answer two or three conversations at once while she's doing something. Anyway, I don't think we'll ever see, if you get older, you'd never see any better than it was when you're in your youth. Now, if you go on from this, these are the other things that he had to deal with. So, Sanballat, this is Nehemiah 2. Sanballat the Horonite, Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, heard of it, grieved them exceedingly. There was a man come to seek the welfare of the children of Israel. Now, doesn't that say almost at all right there that, oh no, not this man showing up. If Nehemiah hadn't had a cohort of troops from the king, he might never got started. Well, what could they do? This man had the authority of the king, and the facts were that here were the people that were sent to bring him to the land. Now, when it comes to Ezra, he didn't have that blessing. He went on, it's a different situation, and it's really quite interesting to compare the two. But without that group of being with them and with this attitude of the people of the land, it would have been very difficult to get started. Now, there's something else, young people. I find this lovely to pick up the details of this record. It says, I came to Jerusalem, was there 3 days, and I arose the night. Why does this say he was there 3 days? If you take that little phrase, 3 days, put it into your computer search engine and search through a number of the records, 3 days, you'll find that that was quite common for people, that when they came to a new place, they waited 3 days before they did anything. How long do we wait? 3 minutes? You get off the plane, you're right into it. Or you go to a far-off place, it's almost immediately that you're into something. Whereas in those days, they took time to get adjusted, to get oriented. We just move too fast. It's not that we really have much choice about it. Like, our schedules just don't allow to be 3 days. The weekend doesn't have 3 days in it. So if you're doing something the weekend, you can't wait 3 days. But that's instructional. But after having come all that distance, he waited 3 days before he did anything. And it seems that people just acknowledge that. Like, you don't just get up and have a board meeting that night. You wait. We are losing something in this, in that we move too quickly. We don't take the time to sort of recover, so that when we actually get back into work, we're working with all our physical and spiritual, natural resources. We just go at it too soon. Then I arose in the night, I and some few men with me. Neither told I any man what God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem. Neither was there any beast with me, save the beast that I rode upon. Just a second. What does he mean by that? Like, there's nothing in the record to suggest this outside of that. What God had put in my heart to do at Jerusalem, like, where does that come from? It doesn't come from chapter 1. It doesn't say that God put that in his heart. And yet you'd find that brethren and sisters would say that with the same sense. They couldn't tell you that, one night God spoke to me and told me to do this. But they recognized that the thought to do that wasn't theirs. It wasn't something that they just thought this would be a good idea, quite possibly. Our thoughts could come from the Bible readings. We're doing a reading, And the reading suddenly flashes an idea in our mind. We have no idea how it came in there, but it did come from the readings of God's word, which would then suggest that we would follow the same tact. We'd say, well, God put this in my mind. Not meaning that God spoke to us directly, but we got it from reading his word. Now, isn't that exactly what the Bible tells us? If you go to Romans, the book of Romans, chapter 10, verse 17. See, this simple process is overlooked sometimes for its simplicity. Romans 10, verse 17. So then faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the word of God. So why is it that people have faith? Well, it could very well be that people have more faith than us because they read more than us. And the reading of God's word does that because God says it would. It's an equation that he puts right in his word. If you want to increase your faith, increase your reading, your familiarity with the word, whether it's by listening to it from someone speaking or by your own reading. That's where ideas come from. And I would suggest that that's a major point in the study of Nehemiah, what God put in my heart. You see, if you thought it was your thought, you would hardly believe that God would be with you. On the other hand, you have to be very careful that you don't think that all these thoughts are necessarily God telling you to do it. Like, it's a fine balance here. If you find someone comes along and tells you, well, God told me to do this, you think, well, this person's off the wall. And every now and then you do hear people that say, well, God told me how to do this or what to do. You're saying, well, did he really speak to you like this? Did he send an angel to talk to you? Well, I don't mean that. Well, what do you mean? It's important to be able to answer that question. And I would suggest that what it means is that he had been studying this and working at it so long and recognizing that he needed God so much and recognizing what happened when he went before the king, he asked a small prayer and got the answer that he said, God put this in my heart. That's where these ideas come from. That's where leadership starts. People have been reading God's word. You could never read it enough, young people. Like, I've been reading it, and Sister Dorothy's been reading it for years and years, and we still learn things. Wonder why we'd ever missed this all these years. That's the unique thing about God's word. You never get tired of it. I have tapes. I listen in the car. I spend 3 hours every day commuting back and forth to work. I have the readings. That's all I listen to. I just listen to the Bible being read and read and read and over again. When I do my readings, I get my readings 3 times every day by just listening to it in time that I would lose otherwise because I'm driving. But I can have the readings on. Now, it's boring to the flesh, almost repugnant to the flesh. Your mind tells you, turn that off. And then you got to come back. I'm not turning it off because that is the source of faith. And if I turn that off, how am I ever going to, you know, ever see the needs of the community and try to reach out to solve those needs or to help in the working out of those needs? So you have to battle with the flesh. It will tell you, oh, you don't want to do this. You know, turn on some music. Aren't you had enough? It can think of every reason that I think there is. Hang in there. Stay with the Word of God. Now, this is the result, and I really would think that this is a tribute to leadership as it is in Nehemiah. Not that it's a tribute to Nehemiah alone, because obviously God worked with him in this. So Nehemiah chapter 2, then I said unto them, you see the distress that we are in? How Jerusalem lies waste, the gates thereof are burned with fire. Come, let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach. Then I told them of the hand of my God, which was good upon me, and also the king's words that he had spoken to me. And they said, let's rise up and build. And so they strengthened their hands for this good work. Now that is really, really instructive. Very, very valuable readings. See, that's the way in which he must have finally, after 3 days, going out and looking at those walls by himself, thinking about how he's going to do this. He really assessed it properly, got the people together. This is the night. I'm going to tell these people what I've come for and what we're going to do. And it looks like they just couldn't resist this. You see the distress that we're in. Well, that didn't take much to tell them that because they would have known how that the nations just laughed at them, just mocked them. So, yeah. Well, do you want to get it better than this, or do you want to stay like this the rest of your life? Do you want to get a better quality of life? Do you want to have something like the glory of the age of David and Solomon? So it lies waste, the gates thereof are burned with fire. Look, let's build up the wall of Jerusalem. And you can just hear them saying, what, how are we going to build the walls of Jerusalem? Us. I don't know anything about building. I've never built anything in my life. See, there were people there that were jewelers. They were just worked on fine jewelry, never carried stones, never got dirty. There were people there that were merchants. They were buying and selling all the time. They never worked on a wall. They didn't know how to build walls. But all these people that that were involved did finally get involved. The hand of my God. Oh, that quieted quite a few because, I mean, let's obviously he had the hand of God. Like, how could he have come from being the king's cupbearer all the way to do this with permission to buy the timber, with the authority to actually do this, to hand, you know, to show to the people about them? Obviously, God's hand was with him. And the king's words that he had spoken unto me. It was just the right time. And that is so important, isn't it? I think you all recognize probably in your own life already that sometimes you got the right thing to say, but it's the wrong time to say it. You don't make a request to people while they're eating supper. Wait till they've finished. You know, just leave it for a bit. Like if the kids come to me, Dad, I want to ask you something. I'm just sitting down to eat. Look, if you want an answer now, it's no. And they learn from that. They would never ask me a question during supper because I always say if you ask, they weren't deceitful in it to make sure that if it was no, it was yes. But they just waited, and that was good because there is a time, and people got to recognize it to be patient. That was the time. They said, it wasn't Nehemiah. They said, that's leadership. They said, let's rise up and build. Now, that's stirring up people to get together and get a job done without saying, you got to do it and you got to do it. They were volunteering for it. He didn't have to come and tell them. They said, let's rise up and build. And so they strengthened their hands for this good work. You can imagine them saying, well, you know, really, I could probably not do this job. If I give it to somebody else, I could get out there and working. And people have never done this work before. I guess I could do something. And they came. And even though there were many, many, many more people than ever showed up available to work, the ones that did show up got that work done in 52 days. A remarkable job. But it required the leadership of people like Nehemiah. Now, one of the things that you have to acknowledge in the truth, young people, is that we have had some pretty good leaders in the truth. Like, we look in Southern Ontario, how do we ever get Manitoulin built? Hey, Manitoulin got built because a couple brethren got together and say, look at what we could do here. You've got 2,000 acres of land up here in Manitoulin Island that's so far away from the world, this would make an ideal camp. That's how it got started. And the brethren up there, generous enough to donate the land. Hence, we built that facility up there. It cost many, many thousands of dollars at a time when people didn't have a whole lot of money. But that got Manitoulin off the ground. And then people started to say, well, you know, why we got this facility, why don't we have a kids' camp up there? It came the same way. People getting ideas. We're supposed to instruct our kids. We're supposed to teach them these things. Well, how can we teach them? Why not go away somewhere and all of us will work together? Now, that is just a wonderful spirit to raise your children that way, to find a few other young parents that have the same goals, the same ideals in life and say, well, why don't we just move to have the same in the same vicinity as people have done with Heritage College? Doesn't matter about our job. I'll find another job. I'm going to move where the school is because I want my kids in that school. That's the spirit of leadership, where people gravitate through ideas that are spiritual ideas. God blesses them. Oh, yeah, there's a commitment. There's things you have to give up. You may never have done these things before. In fact, you may have to learn a new career. So what's wrong with walking away from a career, young people? Yeah, you spend all that time, all that money in a career, but then recognize, hey, this is not what I want to do. I don't want to go out there and work for somebody else and come back tired every night to not be able to work in the ecclesia, not have time for my family. I'm so tired. That's the common experience of so many brothers and sisters. You got to take initiative and say, well, I'm going to stop it. Not to be stupid about it and just stop it so you don't have any income and now you're, you know, looking at financial ruin, but to say there's a way out of this. 4 months of planning, Nehemiah did this to get this work done, to try to see how he could do it. There's some other way to do this. Seek God's blessing. Wait for the opportunity and watch that open up. That's what we've got to do. So you've got leaders that God appointed, and you got leaders that God didn't appoint. Like Moses was appointed. God chose him. Joshua, God chose him. You got Gideon. You got Jeremiah. You got Jesus. You got Paul. You got a lot of people in the Bible. If you think about those characters, God did something to appoint them to the task. But then you got a lot of people that were not appointed. Mordecai, he wasn't appointed. But what a spiritual insight that man had as to why Esther may now have been queen. You could just see the thinking going on in his mind through the little brief words that are mentioned about him. You've got Daniel. Look at what Daniel arose to. Look at what Joseph arose to in Egypt. They didn't plan this at all. They were just sort of being swept along. But being prepared, I think Joseph is a remarkable example. You know, he's called upon out of the dungeon, out of the blue, to come up and be the ruler in Egypt. And God worked with him. And I'm sure he must have recognized that for the plan that he had out of all that was said. I have been very, very impressed by trips to England, trips to Australia, to see how the brothers and sisters care for the elderly. Millions of dollars have gone into facilities which are just as par excellence, it seems to me, with buildings to care for the older brothers and sisters. In some cases, it's older people generally. But someone had a vision that this could be done. Join with other people who could help them to see how to do it. And then with others that would actually get the job done. Where is the facility in America? Where are we looking after our older people in America? Now, not because I'm older, I want you guys to look after me. It's just that someone had a vision to do this, and they did it very well. But the vision just hasn't been here. Like, you haven't had people say, well, that's what I want to do. Maybe it's because, in many cases, it doesn't happen till later on in life that you start to see, hey, there's really a need here. And we have a need. And we've talked about it, but no one's ever actually got, you know, the spade out and dug the first hole. And so we're still working. And there must be many other things that people could do if you just saw how other people have done it and maybe what we could do for ourselves. And now that just illustrates that it is testing. And I just wanted to sort of conclude this class with this statement that Nehemiah did not labor in vain. Like, I've thought about this many times as to, you know, he built the walls, but it didn't really seem to achieve anything because the people didn't use the walls to keep an enemy out. They didn't allow the walls to, you know, provide some restraint for their own people. It just opened the gates and life went on, but now we got walls. So was his work in vain? Now, young people, this is a key point in Nehemiah's time and a key point about leadership. Like, not everything works out. And I think this is where God is prepared to work with us because we have some ambition to work. Not that necessarily when it's done, we would say, ah, now doesn't that feel good? Like, there it is after all these years. Like Nebuchadnezzar, this is great Babylon I have built. I don't mean that spirit, but I mean to be able to look at something that's taken years and years to accomplish, and there it is. It could be, there is nothing. We worked all our life, and there is nothing. There is no, I don't know, of any human vocation you can get into that when that happens, you can walk away and say, well, you know, I still feel good about it. But you look at this verse. Like, that's something that we've sort of taken as our theme, but it needs to be prefaced by this one. If you go to 1 Corinthians, I think there would have been many brethren who, or maybe they're survivors, who would say this about them. that although they really didn't achieve anything spectacular in their life, the way they treated life, looking at opportunities, trying to help, trying to see where they could lead, you would conclude this about them, verse 58, 1 Corinthians 15. Therefore, my beloved brethren, be ye steadfast, unmovable, always abounding in the work of the Lord, for as much as you know that your labor is not in vain in the Lord. Now, it could be in farming. It could be in any other occupation you can think of. It could be in vain, like you didn't achieve it. You actually went bankrupt in the process or something like that. But you never lose when you invest in the Lord. So you look at Nehemiah and you say, well, the walls didn't work, Nehemiah. So you might as well have stayed back where you were in Shushan the palace. No, that's not true. Because what Nehemiah did was he inspired a lot of people to get to work. He worked himself. He achieved something for the honor and glory of God, although a lot of people didn't recognize it. So he could say, remember me, O my God, for a good. Like the things he did, it's like I see that as Nehemiah's conscience speaking, just like Paul many times, his conscience, he said, was bearing him witness. Is that voice in his mind, remember me, O my God, for good, because you know that my motive was right. It was honest. I was really trying to help my people. So you could say spiritually, certainly spiritually, well, Nehemiah, you can at least take, you know, this from what you did, that your labor in the Lord was certainly not in vain. And that will be shown to you at the time in the future when we must all see whether our work was in vain or not. So there's a real lesson in Nehemiah to try to conclude whether or not there was something worth in what he did. And apart from seeing it spiritually, you have a hard time with that as to whether there was anything useful about what he did or not. So we take confidence in that, although some of the things we intend to do don't turn out the way we intended, at least it was a work on the Lord, it would be blessed by our God. And we'll leave it there and start up again in our next class.
Okay, thank you, Uncle Frank. This next break is going to be more along the lines of a stretch break, so we're going to try to stay on schedule, so please don't go very far. It's going to be about a 5-minute break. Thanks a lot.